Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, March 13th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris, let's get into it. We haven't really been doing or reading much of anything recently, but we've been watching some stuff as usual. So what have you been watching recently?
So I just rewatched both Barbie and Oppenheimer. I didn't do them on the same day, so I did not have a Barbenheimer day. But I rewatched Barbie first because I haven't seen it since theaters. And, you know, good movie. I'm not as enamored with Barbie as seemingly everyone else was. I don't think it's a bad movie at all. I think it's a very charming, funny movie. It didn't blow me away as much as some people did, but I had fun rewatching it. It definitely has some great humor in it, and you know, I don't want to be the guy who singles out the guy in the movie, but Ryan Gosling really is just so good in that movie. He's just really killing it as Ken.
Yeah.
And then on Oscar Day, the day of the Oscars, I was like, I'm going to rewatch Oppenheimer. Why not? And man, is that movie great! Oh my god! Like, those members of the Academy, they got it right for once. Like, that is just a magnificent movie. I'm sort of like in awe of that, how well that movie works, because it should not work as well as it does. Because, and you know, this isn't anything new. People have said this before, but it's literally just a movie about people sitting in rooms talking really quickly about physics, and that should be so boring. But the movie just flies by. It's like a 3-hour movie, and it doesn't feel like there's any fat on the film. Well, it just flies by. Like the last hour feels like 15 minutes. Like, it's just like so quickly. Like, the editing is so well done and so propulsive, and the score really helps. Like, that constant music just keeps the movie moving. And I'm really just blown away by that movie. I find it really rewatchable too. I find myself like, cause I actually rewatched it when it came on Blu-ray already, but I just felt like rewatching it again. It's just so good.
Man, so I actually had the same type of experience. Over the past couple weeks, I rewatched both Barbie and Oppenheimer and loved Barbie just as much. And I loved Oppenheimer when that came out last year, and I like it even more on rewatch. This was my first time rewatching it since it came out, and I got the 4K, and it just looks incredible on my television. Like, I was kind of blown away by just the visual quality of it, like how it jumps into that sort of like full screen, full frame IMAX kind of thing. It just looks unbelievable. And yeah, the propulsiveness is what I could not get over this time around. Like, you know, the first time you watch anything, you're just kind of like trying to catch up with it and take it all in or whatever. But knowing what was coming and sort of the general like flow of the story this time, I was just shocked at how fast this thing moves. Like, the editing is unbelievable. So Jennifer Lame, who won the Oscar for best editing, I mean, that was like incredibly well deserved. It's like such a great movie. But yeah, what you mentioned about like the propulsive quality of it is like, that was my biggest takeaway this time. It's just kind of like my jaw was on the floor at how well this whole thing came together. You know, it's wild.
It's so good. Yeah.
Did you, like, on either rewatch of both movies, I guess, did your opinion about them change? Like, did you, you know, think Barbie was better the second time around, or think Oppenheimer was better the third time around, or anything?
No, you know, Barbie, I pretty much feel the same way I felt about it when I saw it in theaters. I think it's good, not great. I think it's good for what it is, but I do think it's very much a movie. It's not really about Barbie. It's about Mattel. It's about how quirky and funny Mattel is. And like, that just sort of rubs me the wrong way. I can't like get over that like commercialness of it. Like, again, it's for what it is, like for what Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach did with it. They made the best possible movie you could make about, you know, Barbie. Like, like, it's better than it has any right to be, but I'm just not as blown away by it as some people. I don't know. You know, maybe it's because I'm a jerky man. I'm sorry, everybody. But
go back to your Mojo Dojo Casa house, Chris.
Exactly. Yes, it's because I'm a member of the patriarchy, and that's why I am the problem. I'm sorry, everybody. But Oppenheimer, I like it. Like you said, I like it even more now than I saw it. I was blown away by it in theaters. I loved it when I watched it on Blu-ray first time, and watching it again the second time, I was just like, man, this is so good. Just everything about it just clicks really well. I really love what Robert Downey Jr. is doing in that movie. Like, everyone is great in the movie. It's got a huge cast. Everyone is doing really good work. But like right from the get go, Robert Downey Jr. It's a spoiler at this point, but everyone knows it. Like about how it's revealed that he's the one who's ruining Oppenheimer's life. But if you watch the movie again with that knowledge, you can see that resentment from like the get go, right from like their very first meeting, where Oppenheimer is like, you were a lowly shoe salesman, and Robert Downey Jr. just looks so like annoyed at being called lowly. And it's like it's great to rewatch the movie with the knowledge that he's the one who's like ruining this guy's life. And it's like you can see it right from the beginning that he does not like this guy, and it's like you get it. It's just like it makes the performance even more enjoyable.
Yeah, and you mentioned the rewatchability of it. My wife and I rewatched Oppenheimer on Friday right before the Oscars. I really wanted to watch it again because I had a pretty good feeling it was going to win Best Picture. And I was like, let me see if this movie actually is as good as I remember it being. And it was even better. Even watching the clips, the very few clips that I think they only showed like one little clip package from Oppenheimer as they were introducing each of the Best Picture nominees across the night. And just seeing like a couple clips out of context or something, my wife and I both were like looking at each other like, do you want to watch Oppenheimer again? Like we watched it. It's so good.
I feel the same way. Like, I just rewatched it, and the part of me is like, I'm going to end up rewatching this again at some point. I know. Even though I just like put it on in the background when I'm doing stuff, just because it's so good.
Okay. So what else have you been watching?
So I watched Damsel, which is the new Netflix movie starring Millie Bobby Brown, and it is not good. I am not the target audience for this movie. It's geared towards, like tweens, and that's fine. I don't begrudge tweens their entertainment, but it's good to have stuff for people of all ages. But I found this really the dialogue is just really clunky and sort of just bad. It's not like an awful movie. It's just like, I was just like, man, this is not for me, but it is what it is. Millie Bobby Brown is good in it. I think she's a pretty good actor overall.
You see Enola Holmes?
I actually have never watched that. I didn't watch that or the sequel. So yeah.
Okay. I like the first one. I never got around to checking out the second one, but I was just curious about how this like compared. Have you caught up with Stranger Things or?
Yeah, I'm all caught up on that. So yeah.
So how does her performance in Damsel compare? Does it feel like she's sort of stepping away from that 11 thing and like coming into her own as a performer or whatever? Is this like not really the type of movie where you could judge something like that?
It's a similar sort of performance. It's not like she's like stretching herself. I do think I'm interested to see what she does as she gets older and like stays in the business. And like, cause for a young actor, she's very good, but young actors, they get better in theory. They get better as the more they work and the more they age. And so I'm really curious to see what she does going forward. I really wonder if she can like stretch herself and take more like serious, I don't know where we use the word serious, but like more like adult roles, I guess, because she's like in her 20s now, I think.
Yeah, so, I think so too.
Which is insane, because I just remember when Stranger Things started and she was a child.
Yeah.
And now we're all old. We're all getting old.
And Stranger Things still isn't over yet.
Yeah, somehow it's still on. They're all old and we're all old. We're all slowly dying. That's the moral of Stranger Things.
Okay, so what else have you been checking out recently?
So Observe and Report got added to Max, and I actually had never seen this movie.
I've never seen it either.
I remember when it came out, it flopped when it came out, and it's become sort of like a cult favorite because when it came out people did not like it, and watching it now I understand why people didn't like it, but man, this is a really good movie. It's a really tough movie to watch because the main character is clearly both like mentally ill and also a huge asshole, and it's hard to like spend an entire movie with a guy who's a huge asshole. It's not easy to do. But this is basically like if Taxi Driver was a mall cop instead of a taxi driver. If Travis Bickle worked at the mall, that's what Observe and Report would be. Seth Rogen, he plays, he says at one point he has like bipolar disorder, and he plays a mall cop who wants to be a cop, like a real cop, and he takes his job very seriously. But he's just a huge piece of shit. And it's just like, it's a dark movie, man. Like it goes to really dark places, and it's not like he has like a comeuppance where it's like, oh, he learns a lesson. He learns to not be a bad guy. Like the movie basically ends with him not changing at all. And it's like, I get why people did not like this when it came out. Because it came out in the height of, you know, the Apatow era when, you know, Knocked Up was coming out and Seth Rogen was becoming a big star. And it was sold as like, it's another quirky comedy with Seth Rogen. And it's definitely not like those movies at all. It's darker. It's moodier. It's weirder. But it's really, it's funny. If you can get down with dark comedy, it's very funny. I was really impressed with this. And it feels like even more prevalent now because recently Martin Scorsese did an interview and he was saying like, these days, every other person is like Travis Bickle. And like, that's how the world feels right now, where like every other person is just like this insane, like
misanthrope or something.
Yeah, just like this deranged loner traveling about the world. It's like, the movie feels even more prevalent now when you watch it, like, because not that everything was like hunky dory back when it came out, but it just like the world feels like a darker place now to me, at least. And watching this movie, it's like, oh, this makes sense. This fits in with. It's, I guess I'm saying like the movie was like ahead of its time. Sort mm-hmm. of way.
So what do you think about Seth Rogen in this role? Because the way you're describing it and the way that I've, you know, the things that I've heard about the movie over the years, it doesn't sound like a typical sort of like Seth Rogen laugh, you know, comedic type of performance. So what did you think about him sort of shifting into another gear for this movie?
He's really good at this. Like I said, he's playing an asshole. So it's like, it's a tricky role, but he really pulls off like, just the rudeness of this character, like the oblivious, like he doesn't realize he's like a jerk. He thinks he's like the coolest guy in the world. And it's like, so it's, you know, I think Seth Rogen is actually an underrated actor. Like every once in a while, he turns in like a really great, not just comedic performer, but like he's got dramatic chops. Like he's in the Steve Jobs, the movie Steve Jobs, he has a small role in that. And he's like the best part of that movie, even though like the movie is filled with heavy hitters. Like he's phenomenal in that, playing Steve Wozniak. And he's really good in The Fabelmans too, playing the guy who cucked Spielberg's dad. So,
yes.
So yeah. I like Seth Rogen. I think he's kind of an underrated performer.
Okay, excellent. So what's the last thing that you watched recently?
So I finally watched The Marvels, which is, of course, the most recent Marvel movie, and it flopped big time at the box office. And you know what? This movie is not that bad. The first half hour or 40 minutes, I was like, I don't know what is happening, because I'm not, like, caught up with the world. I don't watch the Marvel shows. I have seen all the movies at this point, but I've never watched I watched WandaVision, but I did not watch Miss Marvel, which plays a big part in this movie. Mm-hmm. I did not watch like Secret Invasion, or whatever the hell it was called, the Samuel Jackson. I didn't watch any of those. So watching this, I was like, "What the fuck is going on?" Like the first like 40 or 45 minutes, it's like, and it's like edited in this really like quick, like choppy sort of way, and I was like, "I don't understand what is happening in this movie at all." And then eventually, I sort of settled in to the rhythms. Like, I don't think it's a great movie. Like, I'm never going to like rewatch this again, but I definitely don't think it's as like bad as its reputation suggests. There's some fun stuff in it. Like, there's a scene where they go to a planet where everyone communicates through song, which I thought was just very funny and like clever. Cause like, you know, that's the sort of thing these movies should be doing. Like the sky is the limit. You can do anything in these worlds. Why not do something like fun like that? And then like the last, like the third act of the movie involves a scene where like hundreds of cats, you know, they're not cats, they're the Flurkin or whatever, they're the aliens that look like cats, are like eating people. And there's like a, have you seen the movie Banner?
Like, yes.
Yeah, so there's a part like, so basically they have to like escape this exploding ship or something like that, and the only way to get, there's not enough escape pods, the only way to get people off the ship is to have the cats eat them and transport their bodies back to Earth, because the cats take up less space. And so there's this sequence, it's set to Memory from the musical Cats, and it's sung by Barbara Streisand, and the cats are running around the ships eating people, and there's an announcement on the intercom going, "Do not panic, let the Flurkin eat you." And I was like, this is fucking hilarious. Like, this is like the funniest thing I've ever seen in a Marvel movie. So I'm not like 100% pro the Marvels, but I definitely think it's better than its reputation suggests.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear that you're on, you know, the brighter side or whatever with that movie. I think at the time, I have not rewatched it, but at the time I remember feeling similarly, like there's no way this movie deserves all the vitriol that it's getting and all of that. I thought it was fun at the time. Yeah. If not great, probably like a middling type of Marvel movie with some good stuff in it. I thought Amon Vellani, who plays Ms. Marvel, was just like a tremendous breath of fresh air. What did you think about her having not seen the show?
Yeah, she's great. She's very charming and likable. She's got a real like charisma. So yeah, I really liked her in the movie. I really liked her family too. Her family, every time it like cuts to her family, like, there's a part where like her dad is giving like retirement advice to like one of the aliens. I was like, this is funny. This is a funny thing. So I liked her family.
Yeah. I hope she and the rest of the Khan family show up in future Marvel stuff. So we'll have to see about that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, so I watched a movie called Houseboat from, I think it's from like 1958 or something. And it's a Cary Grant movie. Cary Grant plays a State Department employee who is estranged from his wife. And basically at the very beginning of the movie, or maybe before the film even starts, she dies unexpectedly. And so he comes back to the U.S. to take care of his three children who are very young. And he realizes that they're quite a handful, and like he's not really like a dad figure. And Sophia Loren plays this Italian woman. She's the daughter of a famed conductor who is visiting America, I think, for the first time, and essentially as a way to rebel against her father and experience what real life is in the good old US of A. She is like she basically like takes a job as the nanny of Cary Grant's family. And so it reminds me a little bit of like The Sound of Music, in that there's a stern father figure and a more kind of like free flowing nanny character who gets the kids to open up and kind of like helps bridge the emotional gap between them and their father. Yeah. It doesn't really have like the epic sweep of The Sound of Music. It's more reserved than that, more small scale, but it's also more of like a family movie than I expected. I don't have kids, but I imagine it would be fine to show it to, you know, any like young people in your life or whatever. And Cary Grant and Sophia Loren are pretty good together. So it's a nice way to spend, you know, 110 minutes or whatever. So it's streaming on Pluto TV. I assume you probably have not seen this, Chris.
No, I've never even heard of this. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun little movie. Have you ever seen Red Sun? I think this is from like 1970, 1971, something like that. Ever seen Red Sun?
I have not, no.
So yeah. Terrence Young, who's the director of some of the early James Bond movies, directed this. And it's a Western and it has this killer cast. So Charles Bronson plays a bandit who tries to rob a train in the opening set piece. And he's double-crossed by his partner, who's played by the French actor, I think his name is Alain Delon. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but he was in like Le Samurai and he's like a great, you know, classic French actor. So Bronson is like left for dead. And one of the people on the train is played by the awesome Toshiro Mifune, who plays a samurai bodyguard to the Japanese ambassador, who's also on the train. And Mifune ends up teaming up with Bronson to get revenge on Delon's character. And then Ursula Andress, who played the first ever Bond girl, pops up as a woman who is like caught in the middle of this whole adventure. So it's a really fun Western. We always talk about how like Lethal Weapon basically invented the buddy cop genre. But if you're looking for, you know, a similar type of flavor from like 15 years earlier in the Western genre, I think Red Sun will definitely scratch that itch for people. It's streaming on Tubi right now. And it's not a buddy cop movie because neither character is a police officer, but it's, you know, it's like the classic juxtaposition of these characters who don't really like each other, but are kind of forced into sharing time together and going on the same adventure to you know, get the same ends kind of thing. So, Red Sun, it's pretty fun. Speaking of fun, I also watched Another Thin Man, which is the third in the Thin Man franchise, which stars William Powell and Myrna Loy. I had heard that the first film was great and the rest of these movies were pretty bad, but I'm happy to say that I think all three that I've seen so far have been really enjoyable. The first one is still the best one of the bunch by far, but there has not been the type of drastic drop in quality that I'd been led to believe. So I'm not going to really get into the whole plot of it or anything. It's basically like more of the same, and Powell and Lawyer are just like so much fun to watch. So if you like these types of movies or like detective stories from the 30s and 40s, yeah, check out Another Thin Man. I think you can rent this one for like $4 at all the usual places. And then the last thing that I watched is a movie called Charlie Varick. Have you ever seen this, Chris?
I've heard of this, but I have not seen it.
Yeah, so Don Siegel directed this. I think Quentin Tarantino has name-checked this movie a bunch. It seems to be, you know, a movie that influenced him, or at least one that he like grew up watching. It was like a big deal for him. I know Don Siegel is like one of his favorite, one of his favorite directors. And Walter Matthau plays the leader of like a four-person gang who go around the country pulling off really small-time bank robberies, often for like a couple thousand dollars or something. But this time they've robbed the wrong bank. Like they rob a bank that served as a drop location for the mafia. And they end up with like $750,000 or something, where they're just like so in over their heads, way more than they expected. And they immediately realize they are in deep, deep trouble, because now the cops and the mob are going to be after them. And Joe Don Baker, who I've always thought of as kind of like a joke actor, like he was in some movie that like Mystery Science Theater 3000 Mitchell. Made fun of. Yeah. Yes. I remember seeing that when I was like 14 and being like, wow, this guy is terrible. And like, I'm sure that commentary didn't help, you know, make me think that he was a great actor or anything. And then I think he's popped up in like a couple of the Bond movies or something, like the Pierce Brosnan era. But I always thought he was kind of a joke, but he plays an assassin who was like hot on their tail this whole time. And I thought he was like legitimately pretty scary in this movie. So it made me look at Joe Don Baker in a new light. But yeah, this is a really, really fun heist thriller. There's some solid, like practical action scenes. It's really well written, and Walter Matthau is great, and it's just a lot of fun. So Charlie Varick is streaming on Netflix right now, but I noticed that it said it was going to be disappearing from that service on April 1st. So
it's always fun when Walter Matthau shows up in an older movie and it's not like a comedy, because you're like, you just associate him with comedy, and then it's like The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3. Like, he just shows up at that and he's just like, he's like the hero in that movie. And it's like, it's so strange. I'm so used to him just as like this. I'm used to him as grumpy old men. Yeah. So yeah, I love that when he shows up and stuff.
Yeah. And he's also, you know, like the, maybe the perfect example of like the fact that this guy was a movie star in the 70s. And he just looks like, you know, a normal guy off the street. He's not, you know, Hemsworth level jacked or whatever. And it's just like the dichotomy between looking at what a movie star used to be in the 70s versus what it's become now is maybe just like never clearer than when you look at Walter Matthau's career. So just really, really solid stuff there. So if you want to check that out before it leaves Netflix, you got a couple more weeks to watch Charlie Varick. But Chris, I feel like you would really like this one. It's you know, it's a pretty short movie. It doesn't really overstay its welcome or anything.
I'm definitely gonna watch this now.
Yeah, like
heist. I didn't realize it was on Netflix. So.
Yeah, heist movies always have like a fun sort of formula to them or whatever. And you know, you've got some Joe Don Baker as icing on the cake. So
I love the image on Netflix is Walter Matthau holding a gun and there's a plane flying behind his head. I'm like, all right, I'm sold on this movie.
Well, I don't want to burst your bubble. I don't know exactly what that image is, but that seems like it's trying to pull a North by Northwest or something.
That's what it looks like. It looks like North by Northwest with Walter Matthau instead of Cary Grant.
Well, he is a pilot of sorts in the movie. So there is a scene where he gets behind the wheel of I guess planes don't have wheels, gets into the cockpit of a plane, I guess. Yeah, exactly. But he's not chased by a plane, so don't have that as part of your expectations.
Right. Well, then never mind. I'm not going to watch it. I only watch movies where people get chased by planes.
Okay, well, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about several of the things that we talked about on the show, certainly the Marvels, Oppenheimer, and Barbie, and Damsel, at slashfilm.com. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.